Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Houston, standing by, over.
Jeremy and Joe starts now
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Sure. You sound very quiet, I think.
You can hear me now?
I can hear you.
I can hear you.
I don't know if I can hear myself. A little more flurry in my headphones. Is it?
Maybe.
How's it my fault? The music sounds loud. I sound very quiet. I don't know how you that's my fault.
I don't know. I just blamed you.
Yeah, I would like to know why you're blaming me.
You're an easy target.
I'm not.
You're in the room with me.
I'm the wrong target.
He's in the other room.
You can see him.
Hi, AJ.
Directly. I still sound quiet. AJ's in for Brian today, screwing everything up. Although you're going to get better music and less interruptions. So there is that. He's Joe. I'm Jeremy. We're Jeremy and Joe. I don't know if I said that yet. That sounds better. Monday Night Football yesterday. A lot of turnovers in this football game, huh?
A lot of turnovers on one play.
Jalen Hurts was like the first quarterback ever to turn the ball over on the same play twice. Turned it over twice on the same play.
History maker.
He went from being a guy who never turned the football over to, like, setting records for turnovers. Last year, Jalen Hurts threw 5 interceptions on the entire season. Like, took care of the football. I loved him for it. Won a Super Bowl. I've been very disappointed in Jalen Hurts this season. He's not had a good year. And, like, do I think that they set him up for some failure with a bad offensive coordinator hire? Like, they do this every other year. Like, they hire Brian Johnson. He's bad. Fire him. You bring in a real coordinator in Kellen Moore. You win the Super Bowl. He gets the Saints job. You promote somebody else from within. That's not going well. Sirianni's having to be more involved. You think they would have learned their lesson. So I don't think that they're actually, like, setting Hurts up for, like, tremendous amount of success. But he's gone backwards for me this year, Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, he has gone. Well, and he's reverted back to really to 2023. 2023, he threw 15 interceptions.
Bad OC.
And that was the bad OC year. And then last year, it goes really well. You have a good offensive line. You have a good run game. And I don't think it's, you know, quarterback. He's dependent on everything being perfect around him. But he's been bad this year. And that offense has been disappointing. And they feel like they're a one-and-done, a shoe-in to be a one-and-done in the playoffs.
Yeah, I can't go that far. I still think they can turn it on.
I don't see it. This feels just like 2023 to me.
It does feel that way, though.
They're not that team this year. Maybe they're an every other year team. Remember that when the Giants won the World Series?
I think the biggest correlation is their OC.
Yeah, so they're fire their OC.
Good OCs. Bring in good OCs. Stop promoting from within and promoting guys who shouldn't have the job.
Or just call plays as the head coach who was an offensive guy.
You could.
Why not do that?
I think that he's kind of going that direction.
I think he has to, at least for this year, to try to salvage it. And then you fire him, you bring in a new OC. You hire Kevin Stefanski or something like that.
That'd be nasty.
That would be really nasty. Try to fix it in the offseason. But the Eagles are a huge disappointment. I mean, that play last night, obviously not all his fault, but what a bizarre game last night was.
Yeah, it was I mean, that interception he threw, like, despite all of the turnovers, they're right there to win the game. They're right there to win the game, and he tries to force a pass into a tight window. That was ill-advised. Like, you're in field goal range. You need to be uber careful with the football in that spot. Was it a good play? Yes. Was it a terrible decision? Also, yes.
Do you think them being close in that game last night, though, is a reflection of the Eagles or a reflection of the Chargers?
I think both.
Because I lean more Chargers. I just think, to me, they're, I guess they're counterparts, it feels like. Where, like, Your quarterback's hurt now in Justin Herbert. You're missing both your tackles. You finally get Omari and Hampton back. Like, you're not using your weapons like you were earlier in the season. Justin Herbert was having great success with both, you know, all of the above, with Keenan Allen, McConkey, Gadsden. Now it's really just McConkey or nothing, it feels like, for this offense. So it was not a pretty football game last night.
No, it wasn't a pretty football game. Probably should have known that with ever, you know, Chargers and Eagles are playing one another. I was rooting for the Eagles, though. Openly rooting for the Eagles. I wanted them to win. I like Jalen Hurts. And then also, you know, AFC team losing is good for the local 11. It's good for the hometown Texas. Not that it's majorly significant, because you do have a game against them. So you control your own destiny against the Chargers. But, you know, you lose that game. Maybe you lose one to Kansas City, and that head-to-head doesn't become all that important, as important as it could be. So I was pulling for the Eagles in that game. Did you see Justin Herbert after the game where I don't want to say he big-leagued Laura Rutledge, because he did the interview, but he's like, I really don't want to do it. I got to go celebrate with my teammates.
Yeah.
What was your impression of that? Because I've seen him I've seen him, like, roasted. I've seen Laura Rutledge, like, applauded.
Weird. I get it if you're a broadcast nerd. Mm-hmm. Like Casey Smith. Like, I like Casey. She works for Barstool. I used to work with her here on the old
network.
I have
no idea who that is.
You don't know who Casey Smith is?
No clue. I don't think 90% of our audience knows who Casey Smith is.
She used to work for TexAg. She used to be an SEC.
Yeah. You say Casey Smith like everybody should know who she is. I think more people do not know who she is.
Okay, well, I guess my bad. She's on the most popular college football show outside of Josh Pate.
713-780-3776. What's her name again?
Casey Smith.
Do you know who Casey Smith? It might not even be a girl. Are you sure it's a girl? Casey's a girl? Because yes. It can go both ways. Casey's a girl name and a guy name.
Valid point, but girl.
Casey Candell.
But she was defending, because she used to be a sideline reporter, Laura Rutledge making a big deal about, like, it's in contract.
Hold on. Do you know who Casey Smith is? 713-780-3776. AJ, do you know who Casey Smith is?
No, I do not.
Yeah, he's just dropping Casey Smith like we were supposed to know who Casey Smith
She's
is.
She's a well-known, like, college football personality. I don't know.
Well-known to you. Two-thirds of this show doesn't know who Casey... Do you think Brian knows who Casey Smith is?
Maybe not.
Okay. All right, so go on anyways.
She was defending Laura Rutledge, making a big deal about it because he walked away. I don't care. It's in their contract. They have to do interviews. But like, what's the big deal?
Is it, though?
I think a player has to. I guess not like in Herbert's. I think there's they're contractually obligated to do interviews with the TV networks.
I'm not sure.
I think they are.
Maybe you get that written into a TV contract. I have no idea. I have no clue.
Because I feel like if it wasn't, then wouldn't this happen more often? Where players just like just don't want to do interviews?
I mean, that happens quite a bit. Yeah. Like, why does Jordan Alvarez not do all of the walk-off interviews for the Astros? Like, why does Kevin Durant not do all of the walk-off interviews for the Rockets?
I think but it's different. It's a quarterback.
Okay. Why quarterback does CJ Stroud not do all of the... Well, I guess he does. But he does it for, like, the networks. Well, the counterpoint to my argument would be, like, those are locally owned by the teams.
Yeah.
Like, they're, like, you know, good graces with the team. They don't want to annoy the player type of thing. Whereas a big network isn't going to really care. It might be written into the contract. I don't know that. It didn't really bother me either way, though. Like, I don't mind.
I don't care.
Like, Laura Rutledge is chasing the interview. Like, she's doing what she has to do. That's her job. Like, hey, Laura, go get Herbert. Okay, look, I'm going to go get Herbert. She probably hasn't run into too many situations where an NFL quarterback after a win told her no. And, like, she was polite. Like, she was super polite. Like, maybe she went a question too long when Herbert was, like, very, very eager to get out of it.
Yeah.
But she was trying. I mean, she was doing her job. I have no problem with what Laura Rutledge was doing. I also don't mind what Justin Herbert did. Justin Herbert said, I want to go celebrate with my teammates. She asked again nicely. He's like, okay, fine. Like, wasn't mean. Wasn't rude. I thought that he handled all the questions politely.
Yeah.
Like, the only one that he was short on was the injury, which, okay, like, he doesn't want to talk about his injury. That's fine. But any other questions about his team, he gave, like a very normal answer to. I thought that it was fine. It was just an awkward moment for that brief period of time where the camera caught Justin Herbert telling Laura Rutledge, like, do I have to? I want to go celebrate with my team. Other than that, it was perfectly fine.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. It's something that I think people on the internet make a big deal out of. And that's it, right?
Yeah, it was like, because it's weird, because it's something you don't see.
Yeah, you don't see it very often. Like, if there's a no, it typically doesn't get caught on camera.
Like, why are circuses such big deals? Because no one sees circuses, right?
Yeah.
Like, why are freak show acts such a big deal? Because you don't see it that often. Why, like, on TikTok, are there certain niches that blow up and go viral? Because you never see it. Like, the uniqueness is something that, like, captivates people. So when you have quarterback telling sideline reporter, like, hey, I don't want to, that's something you don't see very often.
Yeah.
So it's unique, and it becomes this viral moment.
Look, we know what viral moments are. We're going viral today. Have you seen that?
I have.
It's
well, we aren't.
Lance is
going viral
today. Very viral.
People took his Philip Rivers on a mobile seriously.
One guy did, portrayed it as very seriously, and then everyone bit into it.
So, like, his commenters believed the guy who tweeted it out?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw, like, a little bit of that going on.
It's very funny.
Like, Lance was fighting it. Lance was fighting it, which I get his position. Like, he works for the NFL, and, like, he knows Chris Ballard and all of that.
Yeah.
At the same time, like, I think that I would have, like, I think I would have argued with the guy. I think I would have, like taken, like, a serious route with it. With
like,
that guy
I know, like, I can't believe Philip said this. Like, I can't believe he would say this about Joe Burrow.
I can't believe you could fall for that.
It's remarkable because I told Lance, I said congratulations, like your impersonation spot on. Clearly,
it's really I didn't think it was. See if you could pull up a little bit of that, AJ.
I denied.
See if you could pull up some Philip Rivers on a mobile. I didn't think that the impersonation was wonderful. Like I think he's lost his fastball. I think he's no. It's because he hasn't done it in a while. Like it's not something that's routine. It's like your golf game, right?
Yeah.
Like whenever you're playing like routinely in golf, you're going to be better than if you're not playing routinely. So the fact that he hasn't done Philip Rivers on a mobile probably in the last 3 or 4 years,
You
could tell that he didn't have the reps to like be at his A game with Philip Rivers. I thought it was like one of the worst Philip Rivers impersonations he's ever done. I've heard Philip Rivers in a mobile in the past.
So have I.
Yeah, I thought it was Lance. Like, and maybe this poster who like took Lance seriously doesn't know what Lance sounds like, maybe, or must not know what Philip Rivers sounds like.
I'm kind of fascinated, like, since this person didn't know that it was a bit, how they found it.
Yeah, I mean, was it...
Like, they promoted Philip Rivers on a mobile on Twitter, I guess, and like...
Yeah, because he screen grabbed it, didn't he?
Yeah.
So he recorded some of it.
Yeah.
So he must have been watching.
Yeah. And just like saw Lance's tweet that Philip on a mobile was calling in. And then this guy was like, oh, it's Philip Rivers. It's the real one. But why would he come on a radio station in Houston?
Well, I mean, there's some idiots out there.
Yeah, there are.
There's some people who don't get it.
Yes. Clearly, we found a bunch of them today.
I argue like 90% of Twitter, I think, is that way.
That's fair.
95% of the Twitch is that way. Actually, the Twitch aren't idiots. They're just major trolls and don't have jobs.
It's true.
They're sharp, but they're dumb. Mm. I think they're sharp, but I think they're dumb.
I question the sharpness at times.
I question what they're doing with their time.
Agreed.
Quite frankly.
They love us.
That's a weird deal, though, with Philip Rivers going to Indy. I kind of love every bit of it.
It's awesome.
Do you see the J.J. Watt tweet where Philip Rivers is, like, running the Shane Steichen offense with his high school team because he, like, loves the offense and he talks to Shane Steichen about it all the time? Like, do we think Philip Rivers is actually going to play, though?
Yes.
I have a hard time. I guess it depends on Riley Leonard.
And they said it's week to week.
But can he play this weekend?
They're not sure yet.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be tough.
Like, I can't imagine Philip Rivers coming out of retirement at 44 years old and having to play in an NFL game. Like, what is he going to do against the Texans in week 18?
It's probably better than Anthony Richardson, though.
Yeah, well, they said his arm looks good. That's what all the reports are. Arm looks good. He's in shape.
I mean, all he has to do is dump it off quickly.
Fastball's there.
Hand it off to Jonathan Taylor, dump off to Tyler Warren.
Yeah.
Short, quick game.
You know what that means?
What?
First play of the game, 50-yard bomb. He's going to chuck it downfield.
Play action.
Yeah, throw it downfield. I can't wait.
It's so weird.
It's going to be must-watch television.
I mean, I love it. I wouldn't go that far.
I want to see it.
I'm not going to tune into the Colts.
I am.
When do they play? Noon Sunday?
If I see a tweet, Philip Rivers coming in, I'm flipping it over.
Like, what if he starts the game? You're gonna find it on the internet? You're going to go to Crack Streams and watch it?
I have Sunday Ticket. I'll put Sunday Ticket on the small TV, on the laptop. I'll put the Texans game up on
the
They play
at 3:25. That makes it easier.
Much easier.
Yeah, it makes it easier.
Can't miss.
When do the Bears play? Because we know that has all your attention.
12.
Yeah, so this it does open up the window that he plays at 3:25. Like, this should be America's game of the week.
Yes. I'm all in on it.
It's on CBS, but...
And it's...
They play at Seattle, too. Oh, he's not playing. I don't think he's going to play.
I hope he does.
I do, too.
It feels like if Riley gets hurt, he has to play.
So I was I get best ball stuff on my Twitter algorithm.
Yeah,
and the playoffs start this week in best ball, and there's like 4 unique lineups that have Philip Rivers in it. They're in the playoffs. They just like drafted Philip Rivers like with their last pick,
That's
and like
awesome.
Boom, there he is. So like their lineup is incredibly unique. Where Philip Rivers, not that he will, but if Philip Rivers plays and then has like this it's a weak winning week.
Yeah.
And like all of these teams are going to advance without any issues because they're incredibly unique.
Is it going to change
They've created Philip Rivers leverage.
Is it going to change your draft strategy?
No.
Next year?
No.
Just take a flyer on some old quarterback?
No, like Tom Brady was being drafted last year, so no.
Well, that makes sense.
No, it will not change my... I mean, Amari Cooper was being drafted.
Yeah, but like Philip Rivers makes no sense because he was eligible for the Hall of Fame next year.
I know.
And now if he plays in a single snap, his name has to come off the books.
So is it so he can be on the 53, but if he doesn't play in a single snap, it doesn't reset the clock?
Apparently.
That's weird.
Or assigned to the active roster. Huh. I'll double check that, but...
Interesting stuff. All right, 713-780-3776. Who was that girl that we talked about?
Casey Smith. I know, the text line never agrees with me.
Well, I just don't think it's a great take.
It's not a take.
It says, who the is that girl? LOL. No, I'm also afraid of women. I'm surprised that wasn't a Twitcher. Huey and Spring says, don't know. Somebody said yes.
Great.
Have no clue who Casey Smith is. I know who Casey Jones is. Do you guys think CJ can win us a playoff game this year?
I like the random text.
We'll save that for mailbag later. That big Philly segment was way too long and extra. We talked about Philly for like 5 minutes.
Yep.
Philip Rivers, Joe Flacco, Aaron Rodgers, Andy Dalton. We're back in the 2010s.
They're all going to play this weekend.
No, they're not. Flacco's not playing this weekend.
Oh, I guess no Flacco. No
Andy
Flacco.
Dalton's not playing this weekend.
Well, you never know. Bryce Young.
Division leading quarterback.
He could get hurt though.
It's pretty likely.
Yeah,
pretty likely.
Depends on the week.
713-780-3776. 2104. I'm a little worried about you though. That you're afraid of women. We need to figure something out there. Just Kansas City give the Chargers a great effort next week, or just give up? I think they'll get a great effort. I think that you have a bunch of professionals there. Mahomes is going to fight. Andy Reid's going to fight. Plus, they're in the race, right? They're not eliminated.
No, it's not over yet.
I mean, well, they could win out, go 10-7. The Chargers have a couple of losable games. Yeah, it's going to be tough for Kansas City.
I mean, it's going to be tough, but you can't just, like, quit.
No, they're not going to quit.
Joe Burrow's going to play the entire season no matter what.
Yeah, he's a dog, though.
They're not out of it.
No, he's a dog. I could see Kansas City quitting if they're officially eliminated, but they're not officially eliminated yet. You know what's weird, though, when you look at the standings? This is why I think like the demise of Kansas City is being greatly exaggerated. They might miss the playoffs this year. Don't get me wrong. They're in a deep, deep hole. But they're the only team in the AFC that has a losing record that has a plus point differential in the entire conference. In fact, it's in the entire league. It's also true in the NFC. Kansas City is the only team in the NFL that's below 500. Maybe even 500 or lower. Yep. They're the only team in the NFL with a 500 or worse record that has a positive point margin.
Mm-hmm. And there's at least three teams that are above 500, four teams above 500 that they have a better point differential than two. So it's, I think
it's more than that. It's more than that. There's four teams that are above 500 that have a negative point differential.
That's what I meant. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but they have a higher point margin than Jacksonville. They have a higher point margin than the Chargers. They have a higher plus minus than Philadelphia. They have a higher plus minus than San Francisco.
I think you said it right yesterday. Like this is probably good for them. They do a reset. You reevaluate everything. You have better draft capital this year. And then you're going to next year with a left tackle who you just drafted, who didn't play a lot this year. Like they'll be fine. Like it's a bad year for them.
I'm gonna be all in on Kansas City next year. Like all in to like win the division, all in, win the conference, all in, win the Super Bowl. Because they're gonna get the best odds than they probably ever will with Mahomes until he's old and like walking, you know, poorly.
Yeah.
And I think it's gonna be plus EV. I think it's gonna be positive value. Look at their losses. They lost by 6 to the LA, the Chargers. They lost by 3 to the Eagles. They lost by 3 at Jacksonville. They lost by 7 at Buffalo. They lost by 3 at Denver. They lost by 3 at Dallas. They lost at home to the Texans by 10. Mm-hmm. Like all of those games are coin flip games. They lost them all.
Yeah, if Andy Reid doesn't go for it, they might have won that game.
They probably do.
And so my only pushback against like their value is I'm not sure we actually see that play out. I mean, how long were they the favorite to win the Super Bowl this year with having a losing record? So like, I still feel like Vegas is going to be high on the Chiefs next year.
I still think that the odds are going to be bad. Like if Denver goes 13-4.
That they'll be higher on Denver.
Yeah, like that might be my favorite bet without even knowing the odds right now. Just Kansas City to win the division.
Yep. Yeah. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I think their 6-7 record is kind of deflated, if that makes any sense. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. We got a busy show. We got so much to get to. Astro winter meetings, lots being talked about with the Astros. Clint Capella and the Rockets, that for some reason popped off on the internet. Don't understand why. We'll cash him or trash him a little bit later as well. But when we come back, do not ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. A little film work with this too. 713-780-ESPN if you want to get in, call, text, whatever. You can hang out with the Twitchers. Beware. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. You can watch us on YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can listen to us on the website. You can listen to us on the ESPN app as well. 713-780-3776 on Twitter at ESPN975. Joe's at Joe George Radio. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Do not ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN975 and 97.9 HD2. First a minute on Pro Dunk Hoops. Kids are going to be looking for some presents here pretty soon. Less than 3 weeks away. Can you believe that? So you better act fast, by the way. But you know what a great gift is for anybody? He, her, kids, whatever. A goal from Pro Dunk. Why? Because this is the best. They make the highest quality basketball goals you'll find. Plus, we're in the perfect time of year for it. It feels great outside. It looks great outside. We don't have many times to be outside and really enjoy the weather in Houston. So this is the perfect time for it. Plus, pro ball's going on, college ball's going on. You're probably jonesing to shoot some hoops, maybe even dunking. But Pro Dunk makes the highest quality basketball goals you'll find. Tempered glass backboard. It gives you that true, authentic feel off the backboard, off the glass. It's got a breakaway rim for you. Well, why would I need that? Because it's height adjustable and you can lower it all the way down to 5 feet and throw down some jams. Relive the glory days. Raise it up to 10 feet. Work on that shot. Raise it up to regulation. That's fine, too. Stainless steel hardware. It's rust-proof, which is must-have in Houston. They have a goal 4 where you can raise and lower the goals with a drill. It's their lightning adjust feature. Makes it easy to do. Makes it fun to do. You don't have to really worry about messing it up because it's kind of bulletproof. Their accessories are next level, too. LED light kits for night play. Backstop nets. Pull pad lettering and lots more. This is the perfect Christmas idea, and you can even get the pros from Pro Dunk to professionally install your goal too. You don't have to worry about it. Perfect height, perfectly straight. You're not going to screw it up because the pros at Pro Dunk will do that work for you. You don't want a big box delivered to your driveway and you're trying to figure out how to assemble 1,000 pieces. No, let the pros do that for you. So give them a call or visit their website, I should say, produnk.com. Get your goal now at produnk.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Jeremy and Joe, live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
He's Joe. I'm Jeremy. It's Jeremy and Joe. ESPN 97.5, 97.9, HD2. Time for the ESPN Houston Christmas Party. Join us from 7A to 1P at Nick's Place on Monday, December 22nd. John Lansdell, they'll be there from 7A to 10A. We'll be there, Joe and I, from 10P or 10A to 1P. We'll have autographed footballs, baseballs, gift cards to give away during the eggnog chugging contest and all the games we'll be playing. See you there at Nick's Place for the best party of the year on Monday, December 22nd. Don't ignore in victory. Also, some lab work here. I was listening to the D'Amico Ryans on with Rock and Roll and okay. John Harris. He's always way more insightful with them. I'm thankful that the Houston Texans PR didn't allow me into their Zoom meeting with D'Amico Ryans yesterday because he just gives the media a look. He scoffs at them. Uh-huh. We're trying to win games. We'll see where they're at the end of the week. But then he gets on with Rock and Roll and John Harris, and he's like an open book. It's way better. So thank you, Texans, for doing that. A couple of things from D'Amico first before we don't ignore in victory what we wouldn't in defeat in 713-780-3776. This is another indicator. I've been on this for a little bit that I don't think the Nick Haley hire was really in the C.J. Stroud's best interest. I think it was D'Amico Ryans more looking holistically at his team, what is best for his entire team. Not saying it's a wrong thing, but so often we look at, they're hiring Nick Haley because, he's going to bring the absolute most out of C.J. Stroud, and it's this perfect marriage. Whereas I think D'Amico Ryans wants an offense coordinator that runs an offense that's methodical, time of possession, runs the football, keeps his defense off the field, kind of old school defensive-minded, which D'Amico Ryans is old school defensive minded. D'Amico was asked about the run, and I think this is another indicator that Nick Haley's more of a D'Amico hire than it is a Stroud hire.
Last week, it's like when things don't, the runs may not look great, but you still just have to stick with it. You have to stick with it, force them to defend the runs, force them to defend a variety of runs. And felt like we did that. I felt like the number was 30. I think we ended up getting like 30 runs, and I always feel like that's the number. That's how you control a game. It's how you win that time possession battle versus KC, who's done a great job. That's what they do. Like, they find a way to just get first downs and keep moving down the field, take calculated shots when they need to. And that was a good way for us, a good formula for us to kind of beat them at their own game.
There you go. I think it's pretty clear. DeMeco Ryans wants a time of possession, ball control offense.
Yeah.
Not saying it's wrong.
I feel like we don't normally hear him put a number on it like that specifically, but that's what they typically do, like 30 to 35 carries a game. That's the strategy you want to go with, and that's what you're going with.
Look, I'm not saying it's the worst strategy. Your defense is number one in the entire NFL. C.J. Stroud's not playing like a top 10 quarterback, so why wouldn't you have an offense that, you know, better suits the defense more than the quarterback? But it's just not the conversation we had whenever Nick Haley was hired, or the conversation we've had at all. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just an observation. DeMeco was asked, though, about what he saw from C.J. Stroud after watching film. He was asked the good and the bad. Obviously, DeMeco spent more time on the good, but does mention a bad play.
The things I like for CJ is the movement, like the movement out of the pocket, escaping the pocket, keeping plays alive. I really liked him keeping his eyes downfield, making plays, especially some of the critical third downs he made to Higgins, Nico, Dalton. Like, he made some really nice throws there. And also the next name, probably I could have said this first, just some of the, what I call the sack saver plays. Yeah. Yeah. It was some of those plays where he's feeling that pressure, guys are on him, where in the past we've taken those sacks. Mm-hmm. He did a great job of just dirtying the football, getting rid of it, knowing, hey, they got us on this play. Let's not make a bad play worse. So great decisions by him there. Mm-hmm. And some improvements, I think there's some throws I think we could have back. I think we can make a better throw there to Nico so we can score on the first play. The first explosive where we run past the defender. But I think he'll just keep working into it, keep improving, making better throws. But overall, really great decision-making by him to not turn the ball over. That's always the most important thing. Didn't turn the ball over and made great decisions when bad things happen. Yep.
I think it's a good point about we brought up the no turnovers yesterday. I think it's a really good point about the no sacks either. Like, you get the number one defense in the NFL. You're playing with a lead most of this game. Don't have many negative plays. Sacks are negative plays. Sometimes throwing it at your running back's foot isn't the worst thing in the world. So I don't think we gave Stroud credit for that yesterday, avoiding the sacks for the most part. We probably should have. At the same time, DeMeco touched on the poor throw to Nico. He said several throws. He only went into one. He's not going to sit there all day and bash his quarterback. But I thought it was a pretty fair assessment from DeMeco.
Yeah, and I think the what he's saying there, it all kind of marries together between the two clips. You want to run the ball well. You want to not turn it over. You want to avoid sacks. Like, the best way to run the ball is to not be in second and 18.
Yeah.
So, like, they have a clear mindset. It's become, as you said, it's become more and more clear as the season has gone on what kind of offense they want to run. It's not the offense, as you said, too, that any of us envisioned or what we think C.J. Stroud could be best at, but it's clearly what they think C.J. can be best at.
Yeah. I think it's more of like a perfect marriage of what they want it to look like, I think.
You think it's just like that's just the offense they want to see on the field? C.J. fit into it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they think C.J. is capable of doing it, but no, I think they are trying to morph C.J. Stroud into a quarterback that they want, that fits their system, that fits what they want. I don't think that C.J. Stroud is a death by a thousand cuts type of quarterback. I don't think he's a quarterback that, hey, we're going to use the 9 minutes of the clock. Yep. Hey, we're going to run the ball 30 times. Like, C.J. Stroud coming out of college was, we're going to sling it around the park in a spread offense and score as many points as we can and as fast a time as we can.
All the best plays from this game against the Chiefs are either shots downfield or him moving outside the pocket. Those things are not typically death by a thousand cuts. Normally it's quick slants, like first read, get out of your hands.
Well, I think they were doing that in the first half. And then I think Kansas City made an adjustment and took that stuff away. They did run the ball 30 times.
No, yeah, but I think, like, in terms of, like, just throwing the ball, like, I think he's not built for that. He's built for the deep shot. Even though the one throw was bad.
But they don't want to play that way.
Yeah, I think I get it. I would like them to.
That's why they fired Kaylee. Like, Kaylee would sit there and tell you what's your – yeah, that's what I meant. Slowik would sit there and ask, like, whenever he's like, what's your identity? He would tell you explosive plays. That would be the first thing that he would bring up. They don't want that.
No, they want.
They don't want a volatile offense that is either scoring a touchdown in, you know, 2 minutes and 12 seconds on a 70-yard bomb or a three and out. They want an offense that's going to sustain drives and keep the defense off the field. It's painfully obvious. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. I just don't think C.J. Stroud is. It's uncomfortable for him. I think he's capable of doing it. I think he's capable of being very good there. But it is a bit of round peg, square hole.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, and they're not going to change it now. And this is probably the plan for next year as well. Like, it's like you have to figure out how to excel in this version of the offense, which, again, I'm with you. I think they can. They just have a lot to work on. It's the little things to me that are holding them back more than it is just the game plan for the offense.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, as we get to can't ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. I've watched that motion penalty 100 times.
Which one? There was two.
When they both moved in motion.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
It's just, I can't believe that an NFL team is having that happen in week 14.
Who do you think was at fault?
Everyone?
I think it was more Stover. You see Stroud, like, kind of bark at Stover at the end of the play.
Okay. I didn't see that, but I mean, it would make sense. Like, you're getting the play in late. CJ's not communicating the play. Guys are mishearing it, maybe. Whatever's going on, and they both move in motion.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Yeah, I think Stover screwed up. I think that was a bust on Stover. Just you know, watching the All-22 and making the best guess. I don't know that for sure. I'm not in the offensive meeting room. But just reading the body language there, like, Stroud went to Stover and was kind of... He didn't go to Noel. Like, that's a pretty good indicator that Stover was probably the one that screwed up there. But it was actually a false start.
I know. They don't even like,
it wasn't even an illegal shift. It was actually a false start because, who was it, Brown? Brown moved before, because he was probably confused. He's like, why are there two guys running around me?
Yeah.
Like, they must have snapped the ball if there's two guys running behind
me. Which, like, don't blame them.
Yeah.
I would think the exact same thing. Yeah.
There goes Noel. Oh, crap. There goes Stover. The, like, play's already going. I didn't even know.
Yeah, like, we got to play football now.
That's what happened.
Yeah, 100%.
Why did he jump? Because two dudes are running behind him.
I thought it was funny. Like, I didn't even know how, like, why was he called on that? Because they were moving before.
Well, it's not, illegal shift is not a dead ball.
Okay.
You can run the play with an illegal shift. That's why the first illegal shift was a touchdown. It's not a dead ball. It's a live ball penalty. If you throw an interception there, they're going to decline the penalty into an interception.
Yeah.
That's why it wasn't blown dead.
I kind of find that strange, just like as an aside. I feel like it should just be a dead ball penalty.
Well, it's hard for it to be a dead ball because it happens at the snap. It can't be a penalty until the ball is snapped.
Yeah. It just...
You see what I'm saying, though?
No, you're right.
Like, the first one, you have Schultz moving in motion. The All-22 didn't, like, cut off Schultz in motion at all. Like, you can't even see Schultz in motion. You see him coming to a stop. But you see Schultz coming to a stop. As he's coming to a stop, less than a second into the stop, Noel starts his motion. So you have two guys in motion at the same time.
Yeah.
Then Noel actually gets set, but he gets set for less than a second, and then Stroud snaps the ball. Like, it's poor procedural stuff. And I think Noel's a little bit to blame. I think Stroud's... very much to blame.
Mm-hmm.
Stroud's the guy who sends Noel in motion. You got to wait. You got to wait, man.
He's
it's
not
simple.
Even looking at him.
Yeah, it's like, I'm sorry. Like, we're going to grade C.J. Stroud like he's a top quarterback in the NFL because they need him to be a top 10 quarterback, top 12 quarterback to be a champion. You can't be sitting there in the shotgun and send a dude in motion whenever the other guy that was in motion hasn't come set for a second. Mm-hmm. That falls on the quarterback. I am sorry. It just does.
It has to. Who else would it fall on?
Everything else is excuse making.
Unless
it could be Noel. Could be Noel starting in motion sooner than he was told, sooner than he should. It could be that. But usually they're waiting on the quarterback. You can even see Stroud sending guys in motion. All right, you come. Now you stop. You come. Like, you see him do it.
Yeah. It's
it
on
can
the
be Noel. It can be Noel. I'm not going to throw out the idea that it could be Noel. It's probably Stroud.
Sure.
Could be Noel. Now, I do think that part of the reason that Noel isn't playing like this tremendous amount of snaps, like people want him to play, is because I don't think they trust him. Like, do you think the Houston Texans coaches want to win a football game?
Yes.
Okay. We're all in agreement that the Houston Texans coaches want to win a football game. If Jalen Noel, in their mind, gave them a better chance of winning a football game than Christian Kirk, don't you think he would play more?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're all in agreement there. Then why isn't he? It's not like it might be some of the route running. I don't know. I don't watch route running that closely. It's because they don't trust him as much as Christian Kirk. Now, are they flawed in that judgment? Maybe they're flawed in that judgment. But the Houston Texans, when they decide to play Christian Kirk more than Jalen Noel, now this last week it was even, and we saw some mishaps from Jalen Noel and some mishaps from Christian Kirk. But if the Texans coaching staff, who very clearly wants to win football games, is playing Christian Kirk more than Jalen Noel, they are telling you they trust Christian Kirk more than Jalen Noel. That's what they're telling you through their actions. Now, we might disagree, but they are telling you that through their actions.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm off the asking for him to play more.
Why is that?
Because they clearly don't trust him.
Yeah, whether it's motions, whether it's routes, whether it's blocking.
Because I think the talent's clear. Like, we've seen the talent show up on the field multiple times this year. So if it was a talent thing and they're saying Christian Kirk's more talented, I'd say, oh, well, then they're idiots. But I don't think that's what's happening here.
Yeah.
So if they don't trust them, how do you argue with that? That's their prerogative. They're the coaches. They're there at practice. Mm-hmm. We're not there. Even when the media is there, it's limited in how much you can see. So to me, there's really no argument. And especially because his counterpart is getting more and more and more involved in the offense than Jaden Higgins. Jaden Higgins has really elevated his game this year in every from blocking to route running, it looks like, to just catching the ball. He's doing a little bit better job, finding the first down marker sometimes, because I feel like that popped up again in this game where there was one where I was like, do you know where it's at, dude? But he did get it. But Higgins clearly has their trust, and Noel doesn't, so I'm not asking again until next year. And if I were asking next year, it's more of a reflection on Noel again, I would think.
Yeah, Higgins should have a built-in advantage there because he was drafted higher. Secondly, I think he plays an easier position than Noel in this offense. Like, we heard a lot in the offseason that Kaylee's slot receiver, they call it their adjuster. It's very sophisticated. You got to be on the same page with the quarterback. You got to be able to have the ability to read a defense. So that adjuster does have more on their plate, which might be another reason that you give the edge to the veteran there. And that slowly and slowly the rookie starts to cut into that playing time. Because it's tough. It's hard if you're a rookie. Like, here you go. We're going to throw you into the wolves. Here you go. Here are things. 713-780-3776. Junkie, does Stroud not have a good enough grasp to carry let me restart over. Does Stroud not have a good enough grasp to make sure they line up correctly? He does not exactly strike me as a field general.
I think it's a fair question at this point. It's how do you not ask that question?
I would say, like,
if it's on Stroud at this point in the season, then does he have a full grasp of the offense? It's still a new offense now. I mean, I think D'Amico in the past has used the cliche of, like, once you get halfway through the season, you're not a rookie anymore. So at this point, it's not an excuse, but it makes you wonder.
You're still a rookie, though.
Yeah.
Like, I see it. Like, yeah. I know what he's saying, but he's still a rookie. I think that CJ has a grasp of the offense. I think he has a grasp of the offense. But if you were to just like, hey, these are your Madden attributes, and field general was an attribute, I know it's not, at least it wasn't back when I was playing, you guys are the video game players. But if you were to look at CJ Stroud's attributes, like his field general attribute wouldn't be that high.
No.
Like, he's not a great commander at the line of scrimmage. He does some of it, but he looks like he's not that confident in doing it. Like, he's not Mahomes at the line of scrimmage. He's not Aaron Rodgers at the line of scrimmage. He's not one of these great field generals at the line of scrimmage. And a lot of the great quarterbacks are fantastic field generals at the line of scrimmage. Now, is CJ Stroud going to be better in year 7 of his career than year 3? Yes, obviously. But Mahomes was pretty good in year 3. Was he going to be better in year 3 or 4 of this offense? Yes, obviously. But Pat Mahomes was pretty good in year 2 of this offense and the first one playing in it. So Stroud can obviously improve in that area, but I think it's very safe to say that's one of the weaknesses he has as a quarterback. I don't think he's a wonderful field general.
Totally agree. And it better get better quickly next season. Like there's no excuse next year.
Yeah.
And really, to me, there should be no excuse now for all of this operational things that are happening with the Texans offense, because like, while it hasn't really bit you this year, it's going to. Like, one of these penalties, and it probably has, I guess if you go back through their losses, you might see a 10-yard penalty or a 5-yard penalty that pushes them out of Kaimi's range that ultimately cost them a football game. But it keeps happening over and over again.
Yeah.
You have to look at your quarterback, you have to look at your OC and say, yeah, he's not good at this right now.
It's an offense that I think has the potential to be very good, but they're being hung up because of little mistakes.
I'm not sure.
I think it has, what did I say, very good?
Yeah.
I think it has the potential to be good. We've seen it be good.
I'm not sure with this OC it can be that good.
See, I don't think that I don't think Kaylee's fantastic. I'm not so sure that, especially now, early in the year, Kaylee was bad play caller, all of that stuff. I think that Kaylee is a little limited.
Yeah, I feel like it's the same team that we were watching week 1 on offense.
I disagree completely.
I think the offensive line...
How could you watch the first half against Kansas City and be like, that's the same offense we saw against the Rams? The offensive line's playing way better.
No, the offensive line's better, and the run game, I think, is better. But collectively, like, it still is not that much different than the Buccaneers.
I disagree completely. C.J. Stroud in the first half against Kansas City. Mm-hmm. C.J. Stroud first two drives against Denver before he was concussed. C.J. Stroud against San Francisco. Like, that was good ball. That was good offense. Now, it wasn't consistent across the board. There is room for it to be more consistent and thus improve. But I think they're night and day different than the first 2 weeks of the year.
Yeah, I really don't. Like, I think, like, you look back at the Buccaneers game and there's a couple good drives in there and collectively it was bad, but just to have, you know, five straight three and outs in the second half, I think it's better, but it's not. I think it's marginal. I don't think they've really improved that much collectively as an offense. Even though the offensive line play and the running game has been better, they're still not as a unit putting all of it together at once.
Yeah, I think I watch this offense and feel a lot more good about the offense now than early, maybe more hope than I did start of the year. That's our impasse. A junkie, at this point in the game, it's clear that CJ's too passive. He is not a leader. Somebody said nope, third quarter. I think over the last 4 weeks, we've seen the offense progress quite nicely, not only the team play, but the coordinator as well. I do think that Kaylee's better now than he was week one, two, three. I think he was in over his head first 3 weeks of the year. I think now he's okay. Not good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay is fine. I can accept okay.
CJ Stroud, third quarter, BS, KC. So I have a... This is something that after watching the film, I feel a little differently about the third quarter than I did yesterday.
Okay.
We asked yesterday who's to fall in the third quarter, Kaylee, Stroud. We both said Kaylee, like a pretty heavy percentage. There was one thing that we didn't account for that we should have. More don't ignore in victories, which you wouldn't in defeat. Some film work as well. 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
ESPN 97.5. It's Jeremy and Joe, broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
He's Joe. I'm the Huntington Bank bad boy, Jeremy. 713-780-3776. Junkie says Branham is being a homer. Jeremy equals CJ homer. Somebody else earlier today on Twitter, because I posted the good plays from CJ Stroud, the bad plays from CJ Stroud, at least from my eye. Everybody views things differently, and that's the fun and beauty of sports and sports conversation. Somebody said early, Carolina Charles on Twitter, if you don't want him, he can go to a team that actually has a decent offensive line and running game. So because I posted a video of CJ Stroud like making a bad pass, Carolina Charles says, I don't want him. So on one hand, you have somebody saying, you don't even want CJ Stroud, Branham. And then on the other hand, you have somebody saying that I'm a CJ Stroud homer.
That's the way you want it, right?
Yeah, I do, actually.
That's right down the middle, then.
it's funny to me to be called a CJ homer on one side, and then you don't even want him. You're not even a fan. Junkie says the offensive line third quarter was horrible. So here's the thing that I don't think we really put enough credence in yesterday when talking about the third quarter. And then watching it back, especially on the All-22, it's like, oh my goodness. I think Chris Jones just flat out wrecked the game. Yeah. I think Chris Jones, like, it didn't matter Nick Haley's plan. It didn't matter what C.J. Stroud was going to do. Chris Jones, for the entire quarter, just flat out wrecked the game. So, like, it makes me feel better long term about the Texans offense. I still don't like what I saw in the third quarter. Like, you still have to run protection schemes to try to prevent it. You still need a play call, scheme it up against a really good defensive player, really good coordinator as well. But I don't think we gave enough credit to Chris Jones just flat out taking the Houston Texans out of what they wanted to do. They got Chris Jones in that third quarter.
He dominated. I mean, Ed Ingram got embarrassed
several times.
Yeah.
So did Andrews.
Yeah. They got. Do you think they got exposed, or it's just Chris Jones was at his elite level?
I mean, there's not many Chris Jones on the planet.
No. But it was
the planet.
It was so bad. It was so bad. I just feel like other people could do something similar.
It did get better in the fourth, though. Like, they started to move it a little bit. Now Andy Reid kind of put life into them. But, like, you know, you started to see some completions. They ran the ball much better. So Jones, I don't think, was as impactful as he was in the third, although I'm not sure that there might have been a better defensive quarter of football than what Chris Jones put on film in that third quarter. Also, I thought Steve Spagnuolo, and, look, maybe this is something that the Texans need to fix. Obviously it is, because it was an issue in the third. I thought he did a great job of not only blitzing, because, like, everybody knew he was going to blitz, but he did a good job of disguising the blitz and where it was coming from.
Yeah.
And he was overloading, like, certain sides of the line at times. And the Texans obviously didn't have a very good plan to cover that, to protect that. So I tip my cap to Chris Jones. I tip my cap to Spags. I thought they had a very good game plan. It makes me feel a little bit better about the Texans. At the same time, it's like you've got to learn and have a counter plan for seeing this again. If somebody's going to throw numbers at you, heavy numbers at you, disguises, overloading one side of the offensive line, like you have to be better prepared the next time it happens, because every team that you're about to play is going to watch that third quarter, see what Kansas City did to you in the copycat league we live in. This happened with the stunts early last year where the Vikings just stunted you to death and then you saw stunts the entire rest of the season. We're about to see a lot of that.
Yeah, and it's going to be like the Cardinals, their pass rush isn't great, but like you got Max Crosby. I think he's healthy at this point in the season coming to town or going to play him in 2 weeks. Like that's a tough matchup. The Chargers can bring the heat. The Colts have a decent defensive line. They get to the playoffs and like they're going to attack you. So you've kind of exposed yourself a little bit. I saw Kunkel tweet this. The quarterback pressure rate was 54.3%. That's not good. They had 19 quarterback pressures allowed. That's the second worst of the season.
It's a little bit of a quarterback stat, though.
It is a little bit, but I feel like CJ did a good job avoiding it this year.
He did a good job of avoiding sacks.
Yeah.
I don't know if he did a great job of avoiding pressure.
That's fair.
But would I point to him first to allow that pressure? I mean, we heard all offseason, hey, we're going to empower CJ Stroud to have more control of the protection and the schemes and how they're doing it. We can't then fast forward 14 weeks and then not put any blame on CJ for it.
Oh, no, it's definitely on CJ. If he's calling the protections, that's on him. That's him not recognizing what Spags is throwing at him in the moment. So, like, that's a concern. That also goes into our conversation we were having yesterday about getting to the line of scrimmage faster and being able to acknowledge what's there. Like, if they're overloading the box on one side and you've got 7 seconds to snap the ball, you're not going to identify quickly enough.
Yeah.
And there's going to be open guys. And then you have Chris Jones just literally dominating you.
And then the Caleb aspect of that, though, is like, okay, we're having trouble identifying where the blitz is coming from. We're having trouble blocking it because they're overloading it. Let me start calling some plays that kind of are bulletproof for that, which quick game, screens. This texter says, I wish Caleb was more creative with his play calling. Absolutely. That was the other don't ignore in victory what I wouldn't in defeat. More quick game. Especially in the third quarter, I would have liked more screens. And look, hey, man, like if they're going to blitz you with seven, what does that tell you that they're doing behind that in the secondary?
Yeah.
They're playing man. It's like you have Nico Collins, you have Jaden Higgins. Like, hey, maybe a one-on-one deep ball just to see if you can go over the top. Like, if it's incomplete, you're getting pressured and throwing it to the running back's feet anyways.
Especially when McDuffie's out of the game.
Yeah. Like I think they should have had more shots there.
Yeah, like whether it's shots, screens, Did you count how many screens they ran? I was curious if you were going to track that.
So there was one at the end of the second quarter that I couldn't tell if it was a screen or not.
Okay.
I couldn't tell if it was a screen or not because it might have just been like a check down with almost – I should have posted it. It was Woody Marks. He threw it at his feet. Four offensive linemen stay in to block normally, and Titus Howard is the only offensive lineman that gets out. So it's like, that's a weird screen.
Well, that to me feels like that's not a screen. That's another miscommunication.
That's the way that I read it.
Yeah, like I would bet on that being more like the two guys moving in motion, that one guy is getting the play call wrong. Because that's what it feels like. All these these plays that are going incorrectly, it feels like it's just there's some level of not everyone's on the same page.
Because in a screen, you're going to have multiple offensive linemen that get out ahead and block.
Yeah, not just your left guard.
And they're going to let the defensive lineman go by, right? Like, yeah. You're going to kind of, like, try to disguise it, like, give, like, an old college effort. But your primary goal is you let the defensive line by you. You get out ahead of the running back. That way you have blockers in front. The only blocker that left was Titus Howard. And you have Dalton Schultz on the same side of Woody Marks. And he's running, like, a little 5 yard out. Where it's like, I don't think that was a screen.
No,
I think that was a check down, and Titus Howard just kind of like was like aimlessly like wandering off the line of scrimmage.
Just freelancing.
It was weird.
Yeah, just freelancing.
Yeah, I don't think it was a screen.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a screen.
Yeah, that was the only one. I thought it was a screen live, but whenever I watched it back, I was like,
I think that's worse if it is a screen.
I was like, you got four offensive linemen that are blocking. Not well, by the way.
Yeah.
Not well. That was the other reason why I thought it was a screen live, is because like it looks like the defense like penetrates so quickly. I was like, well, that must be a screen. Like, they're obviously getting out ahead of the runner because it's obviously a screen because they got to CJ Stroud multiple defenders so quickly. It must be a screen. Don't think it was a screen.
Yeah, and it's something that's so often used by so many offenses almost too much. For the Texans to use it so little is surprising. Like, we've seen Woody Marks be really talented in open space. Like, I want more of that.
Yeah, or even Knoll. Like, they've used Knolls in a little, like, tunnel jet screens at times. Like, and I think that's a role that he's good in. So, yeah, that was weird.
it was not a great game for Nick Cayley, CJ Stroud in the offense. There's good moments.
Especially the third quarter. Yeah, like, I don't want to, like, diminish the first half, though. Like, I thought the first half was good to me. Yeah. I liked what I saw in the first half.
No, for sure. It's just the first half versus the second half, it's two totally different football games. Because I've been hard giving them credit for the fourth quarter because the Chiefs handed you field position.
Yeah, but you did move the ball. You did connect on some critical third downs. You did run the football again. You did convert a late first down by running the football that pretty much kept the ball out of Kansas City's hands. So, like, I think there's actually, like, three different games offensively.
Okay.
I think there's the first half where it's like, I'm pleased with that. Like, I would take that first half offense the rest of the year and be perfectly content. There was the third quarter offense that, like, I'm not sure they're going to score a point the rest of the year. And then there was the fourth quarter offense where it's like, okay, there's some gritty yards there and some, like, gritty, like, let's go win the game. Wasn't pretty, but, like, grittiness of, like, okay, like, at least they got the job done. Whereas the third quarter, I'm like, I literally texted this to my group chat. I said the defense is going to – when the game was tied at 10, I said the defense is going to have to score points for the Texans to win this game.
That's what it felt
like. And they kind of did.
Yeah.
Because they got a 4th-and-1 stop at the Kansas City 29.
Yeah, they deserve all the credit for that score.
Right.
Because if they don't get it, then they probably just march down the field and score a touchdown.
Uh-huh.
Just knowing how the Chiefs work.
You didn't even need a touchdown.
Yeah, you just get a field goal.
So that's why I felt like the offense was three different offenses.
Yeah, and this
the good,
question
the bad,
is,
and the ugly.
In the next four games before the playoffs, can you find a way to play four good quarters of football for, like, the second or third time this season?
They should against Arizona. They should against the Raiders.
Yes.
Like, look, Kansas City's defense isn't bad. Like,
no, it's good. It is good.
It's a tough environment. It's a Sunday night. They're desperate. Like, it is a tough setting to play well offensively. So, like, I think that you have to factor that in a little bit, too. But at the same time, you're currently the 7th seed in the AFC. That would be at a tough environment.
Yeah.
If you were to win that game, you're going to another tough environment. If you win that game, you're going to another tough environment.
Yeah.
So while I think it is fair to, like, keep in mind that they were playing at Arrowhead Stadium on a Sunday night in a big-time environment where a team was desperate to win, that's nothing – that's exactly what you're going to see in the playoffs.
Yeah, so, like, it's really not – it's an excuse in a way, but it's also – it can't be because you have to be able to overcome it if you're going to make a run. This is going to be, again, this will be their first ever wild card berth, potentially, this year, which is still absurd to me. They've never been a wild card team.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Now that you say that, it's like, yeah.
They've only ever won the division.
That's nuts.
Or missed the playoffs.
I do think it's very important to win the division, though.
Yes.
Talk about that a little bit later.
Well, yeah. I don't want to play on the road a bunch if I'm the Texans, but I feel like your matchup's going to be the same regardless in the first round. I feel like they're just destined for Jacksonville. At this point.
Yeah, I mean, we can take a look at it a little bit later. 713-780-ESPN. We'll get to some more Don't Ignore Victories, which you win and defeat. There is one thing, though, watching it back, where I was incredibly impressed with. Incredibly impressed with. Your thoughts on this as well. 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, 97.9 HD2.
Let's talk about D&M Leasing. It's time to get in that new car, and the best way to do it is leasing a vehicle through D&M Leasing. If you've never leased a vehicle before, they will walk you through the entire process. They will talk you through the mileage, like how long your lease is going to be. They've got the lowest payments possible, and they got no payments until 2026 going on right now. So you better hurry up. It's December 9th. All you have to do is go to dmautoleasing.com or call 713-290-1000 today to get connected with one of their leasing agents, and they do everything from your home. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to go anywhere, especially if you know what kind of car you want to get. They will do a DocuSign at home. They will bring the car to you. They make this process as easy and simple as possible and coach you along the way so you know exactly what you're setting up for. Don't get stuck in a 7-year car loan. Get into a lease right now with D&M Leasing. Again, go to dmautoleasing.com or call 713-290-1000 and tell them ESPN 97.5 sent you by.
ESPN 97.5.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.